Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Couple Speak Relationship Forum on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Susan Lager, a psychotherapist and coach at the Couple Center and Couple Speak in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where I come to you live alternate Wednesdays, usually at 9 p.m. I've got a fascinating episode today, Wednesday, April 20th, called Create the Life You Love. Joining me as my guest is Barbara Hofmeister, an international motivational speaker, fellow Blog Talk Radio host, and author of the best-selling book, To Be or Not to Be, The Choice is Yours. Hi, Barbara. How are you?
Hi, Susan. I am fantastic.
I'm so glad to have you on. I'm very excited to meet you after having listened to your radio show, The To Be Show, and having read your To Be or Not to Be book.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. How did you find it?
I found it through Blog Talk Radio.
How did you find the book?
How did I find it? I loved it. I read it in less than a day, and I found it, as a fellow coach, I found it very clear, very inspiring, very empowering, and there were lots of things in the book that I thought were really useful for the reader, and it was kind of a step-by-step guide to realizing your dream, whatever it is. So I thought you did a beautiful job.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, that was the intention, actually, to really give a step-by-step guide that anyone can follow, no matter where they are and no matter where they have been, you know, no matter what their past, but they can actually follow that. I imagine if you read it in a day or two that you didn't do the exercise, because that takes quite a bit longer.
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of the things I liked about it, that it was a workbook and that it really... If you work with it, there's some wonderful exercises in there that I think really make the work really come alive for the reader. So I would strongly recommend that as a book to help anybody move toward their dreams and their aspirations. Now, before we begin, just a few technical things. Your toll-free call-in number, listeners, is 877-497-9046. The regular number, and I don't know if this is the one you called in on, Barbara, because you're international, but the regular non-toll-free number is 760-542-4114. All callers will be muted unless you have a question or a comment. If so, you can raise your hand by dialing 1, and you'll be in line to be on the air. So, Barbara, could you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and how you came to this point in time with the To Be book?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Well, I want to start actually in my childhood, because that was very fundamental to who I became later on in my life. And I was born in former communist Germany behind the Berlin Wall. And what I noticed today is that so many people, so many of us, build our own Berlin Walls around us. And we keep ourselves encastled, and this really is something that I'm on a mission to change, you know, that people keep themselves encastled and don't know how to break out of feeling so limited and feeling so small, because that is absolutely not who we are. We can do something about it, and we will talk in the course of this hour. We will definitely talk about that. Well, my parents took me from Eastern Germany when I was 8 years old, and I had a very idyllic childhood there in communism, because there was not many cars. We lived in a small village. My mom was at home, and both pairs of grandparents spoiled me rotten because I was the first grandchild. So, you know, life was perfect for a little girl. And then from one moment to the next, life totally changed. My parents told me we're going on an adventure. I didn't know what adventure. I thought it was a holiday camp or something like that. And the next thing I know is we are in Western Germany in a big city, living in a tiny attic room, the whole family, no facilities, nothing. And my parents being away almost day and night, trying to make back what we left behind. So my life changed very dramatically in that moment, and I didn't know why. I didn't understand, and they didn't try to explain either. If parents are listening, do try to explain to your kids what you do and why you do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it's something so fundamental, like it was in that case, or like a divorce or things like that, the children do understand more than the parents give them credit for, and they need to understand. They need to be respected and feel the respect and love from their parents, especially in traumatic moments like that. So anyway, my parents didn't do that. So I was totally lost. I hated it with a passion. And it was in those days that I made the decision that never again, when I am old enough, I will not let someone else decide how I have to live my life. I am going to live my life my way. Because, you know, I saw the difference. I mean, they had taken me out. I hadn't asked to be taken out. So that was one decision that I made at such a young age. And still today I live it. My number one value is freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And freedom isn't free. That's another lesson that I learned very young. Freedom isn't free. We have to make some sacrifices. I had to make sacrifices as a child. My parents had to make lots of sacrifices. But eventually, it is absolutely the most, well, for me, I mean, the number one value that I have in life is my freedom, my personal freedom. And I share that with as many people as I can reach, giving them the tools and techniques that will also make them free, because too many people feel that circumstances are against them and there's nothing they can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
And both you and me know that there is always something we can do about it, and that we are not a victim to circumstances. We make our own circumstances.
So you were really able to transform something that was really quite traumatic for you,
mm-hmm,
into a life decision that has informed the rest of your life about how you were going to live your life rather than become a victim.
Absolutely. But it did take time. You know, I mean, I'm putting it now in 2 or 3 minutes, but it did take quite a few years.
Yeah.
Especially as a child, you know, you feel pretty powerless. There's not much you can do. But the decision was made then. And later on, I was abused. I was raped at 16. So that turned me into a young woman of very low self-esteem and very little belief in herself. And I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always on the defensive. You probably know people like that.
Oh. And
I always... Yeah.
Absolutely. I work with a lot of clients who have had some kind of trauma like that, some violation, and they move into a victim mentality, which we'll probably talk about a little later in the show, but they assume a victim stance. They're very defensive and very angry and feel, just have an attitude.
Yes, and I was like that, you know. So when somebody paid me a compliment, I would take it as an insult. You know,
mm-hmm,
because I didn't think I deserved it, so I didn't believe that it was meant as a compliment. So normally I fought it, you know, I sort of slashed back. And in 1978, a friend gave me a book by Dr. Wayne Dyer, and same result. I mean, first reaction for me was insult. I saw on the backside it said self-help book, and I thought, why is she giving me a self-help book? I don't need a self-help book, you know, there's nothing
mm-hmm
wrong with me. And, you know, that
mm-hmm
kind of self-talk. I put the book on the shelf, didn't touch it for a few months, and then one day I had nothing else to read, and I picked it up, and I started reading it. And it was as if Dr. Dyer was talking to me personally. And I thought, wow, he doesn't know me. So there must be other people out there on planet Earth that have similar challenges and similar problems to the ones that I'm having. And this was a big breakthrough, because when you realize that you are not alone, it sort of opens things up. It gives you hope. It gives you a different outlook to life. So that book was definitely fundamental, and it stayed my Bible for quite a few years. I still have it, and it looks really tattered after 33 years, but it still exists. And really, there was so much in there that was helpful to me. And then later on, of course, I started going to seminars and workshops and retreats, and I still do that today. So this is 33 years of attending, and I mean, believe me, I spent a major fortune on doing that, yeah, because also I have to travel. We don't have much here in Germany, so I travel, you know, to the States. This year I've already been to the States in February and to England, to the UK in March. So I go, and I probably go to Malaysia next month for another retreat. And I do that 4 or 5 times a year at least. I enjoy it. I rejuvenate and strengthen myself. And I can only recommend it to everybody, because this is a never-ending journey. It's a journey, really, that is life. And it's so exciting. I mean, for me, life is exciting.
Well, you're living life. It sounds like you're living life on purpose, and you're in your purpose, and you're living your authentic life. So however much hassle may be involved with airplanes and expenses and all that, it sounds like it all feels right and very exciting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love my life, and it's just, for me, it's the way it should be. The way that I want it to be. And as you said earlier, you know, when we spoke before the show, I have already reached quite a few of the goals and dreams and visions that I built for myself. So when I'm talking about how people can live their dream life, I speak from experience. It's not theory. It is something that I've personally done and I'm still doing, and there's still room for space for more. So, yes, I am speaking from my own personal experiences.
That's wonderful. Now, in the book, Barbara, you talk about, the book is all about creating a vision for whatever it is that your goal is, a vivid vision where you make it come alive, and then identifying the steps that need to get you there, really making it more concrete and looking at obstacles, et cetera. I'm wondering, in the book you talk about setting SMART goals as crucial in the process of realizing this vision for a happier life or situation. And I'm wondering if you could tell our listeners what you mean by SMART goals.
Sure. Is it okay if we first talk about the vision?
Oh, sure.
Because that is absolutely vital.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because about 95% of people in the Western world don't have a vision for their life. They don't even have a clear direction for their life. And, I mean, this is a massive number, between 90 and 95%. That is massive. And what happens is people are not clear in which direction they're taking their life, so they are drifting through it.
In my experience as a psychotherapist, Barbara, I find that people have a very clear vision of what they're moving away from. But you're right. They don't they don't have a clear picture of what they want and what they're moving toward.
Do you think that it is because they don't dare to even dream it?
In my experience, I think it's a number of things. I think it's partly cultural. I think it's, I think it takes courage to kind of acknowledge what your authentic self is and what expressions of your authentic self need to look like. But I also think in my work, I deal with a lot of couples who get very bogged down in a kind of problem orientation. So I think it's partly that it's something that isn't really taught to us. We just put one foot in front of the other each day. And I think people need to get it into their brain that you really are the captain of your ship. And it starts with, what do you want, as you talked about in the book?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Totally agree with you. And this is a big issue. This for couples, the same than your own personal vision. If you don't have a clear picture of what you want your relationship to look like, and I mean a crystal clear picture, you don't have a clear outcome for the relationship in mind. You can't see yourself at 90 years old holding hands, you know, sitting on a bench, overlooking the ocean or whatever it might be. If you can't see that, when you are with someone, then you don't have a clear picture of where you're going. You know, you have to really become very detailed on that, and we will come to the goals. What I ask people to do is, first of all, become clear of where they want to take their life. Who do they want to become in this lifetime? Mm-hmm. I think when you are clear on that, you can fill the gap, because you can see the gap from where you are today to where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have an outcome in mind, then there is no gap there. You are just, you know, as you said, you take one step at a time, but the direction is not clear. So we're zigzagging through life, and one day we're 40, 50, 60 years old, and we wonder what happened. What
mm-hmm.
happened to all those dreams we once had? What happened to our life? And I was talking a few weeks ago when I was in the UK, I was talking to a nurse that works with terminally ill cancer patients, and she sees a lot of suffering. And she told me that, Barbara, the greatest suffering that I see is not physical, because we can medicate that. She said the greatest suffering I see is when people know it's their time to go and they have so many regrets. They have so many things they wanted to do still in their life but hadn't done.
The what might have been. I forget who authored that. The greatest tragedy of tongue and pen is not what was, but what might have been.
Whitman, I think.
Whitman. Okay. Yeah. I see that a lot.
And this is, you know, this is why I ask people to really work on that, because it is so vital for their happiness. It's so vital for their fulfillment, and it's also so vital for them to actually be able to take those SMART goals, to set the SMART goals, and to overcome obstacles. Because we all, and I want everybody to listen here, everybody has obstacles and hurdles to overcome in their life.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody.
Well, I'm going to want to ask you about that a little later, about the obstacle thing, but could you explain
Yeah, let me just finish that thought, because otherwise I might forget later. But some people seem to be able to handle them much easier than others, and that is because they have that vision. When you have a long-term vision for your life and it's really clear and it really pulls you, then the obstacles are just hurdles. You know, the problems are not really problems. They're hurdles.
Right.
It's a pain in the butt sometimes, and it might slow you down, but it will never stop you. However, if people, and in general, people have only short-term goals and very vague ideas of what they want from life, and then when an obstacle, when a problem arises, it's massive. It seems so overwhelming, so big, that they can't handle it.
Yeah.
Or they believe
they
can't handle it. Of course they could, but they believe they can't handle it, and that's a big problem.
Yeah. Could you explain to our listeners, anybody who hasn't read the book, how you would describe the difference between a vision for your life and the goals for your life?
Well, the vision is the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
There's two types of visions. One vision is, who do I want to be at the end of my days?
Mm-hmm.
Who do I want to have been in
mm-hmm.
my lifetime? That is the legacy you want to leave behind. So that is the big picture of your life. And you can ask yourself questions like, imagine that you are 100 years old, your great-grandchildren are sitting at your feet. What story of your life do you want to tell them?
Mm-hmm.
And then look again at the gap of where you are today and where you might want to go.
Okay.
And, so that is one question. But in the book, I have lots and lots of very thought-provoking questions for people to really get answers for themselves, because, as you said, it's a workbook, and it will take them through all the processes so they become clear on where they want to take their life.
Right.
A goal can be short-term. It can be, let's say, a weekly goal, even a daily goal. Many of us have daily goals, things that we want to achieve today, this week, this month, next 3 months, next year, and, 5 years, 10 years from today.
Okay, so in the book, when you talked about one of your goals as learning to ride a big motorcycle, that was a goal, and all the action steps that you needed to take toward that, it sounds like that may have been a goal that was part of a larger vision, a larger picture of living a kind of adventurous, independent life where you travel and you meet people and you go different places and you connect with people in meaningful ways.
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
Correct. I use that, I think, as an example in the book, how we have to break our goals down. So the SMART goal process is any goal, whether short-term or longer-term, doesn't matter, and you how you can make sure that it is a goal that you really want. And that is, S stands for specific, so be specific about it. M stands for measurable and motivational, towards something, not away from something. Like Susan said a few minutes ago, most people know what they don't want, so that's away from something. We want to go towards something because that's more motivating. So measurable, motivating. A stands for action-oriented. You have to take action. You can't just sit on your sofa and think affirmative thoughts and wait for it to happen. Not the best way to do it. Action-oriented. Then the R stands for realistic. With realistic, I don't mean it has to be easy to do, but it has to be doable. An unrealistic goal, for instance, would be I'm 60 years old and I want to become the best tennis player in the world. It's not going to happen.
Right.
You know,
right.
They start at age 4 or 5.
Right.
So it's not going to happen. It's just not possible anymore. It would have been possible had I started at age 4 or 5. But today, not possible anymore. So that would be a totally unrealistic goal. S-M-A-R-T.
And that's T.
T is time-bound. Set a date. Otherwise, it's just a dream. If you don't set dates for things, you will probably not keep any dates, you know. It will not be a proper commitment, and you will not do the necessary work to actually get there.
Yeah, I find in my work with couples, both primarily as a therapist, I don't know if you're aware that I specialize in couples therapy, and I'm also a relationship coach online, but I find that often I will ask them what they want, and they'll say very vague things like, well, I want us to be happier. I want us to be closer. And I have to keep digging and digging and digging to get them to be very specific, to identify what will it look like when it's happening, and what's your time frame for this, et cetera. People have a lot of trouble with that.
A lot of trouble. What I do in my life trainings, I use money because that's the easiest to demonstrate. And I ask people, so what do you want? And they put their hands up, and I take a few people. And one answer is always more happiness. Another answer might be better health. And for sure, one of the first few people will say more money. Mm-hmm. And then I go up to them, and I give them a small denomination of the local currency, like a dollar, for instance, in the States. And I tell them, okay, your wish is granted. You can go home now. And they look at me and they say, that's not what I mean. I mean, what should I do with the dollar? I can't even buy coffee. I said, but this is exactly what you asked for. You are so vague, more money. With a dollar, you've got more money. Even with 10 cents, they would have more money than they had before. Right?
So we've
got to be careful what we ask for. We want more happiness. I mean, first of all, who's to say what more happiness means to you might be something totally different to what it means to your spouse, totally different to what it means to your children or your parents. So, you know, we've got to be more specific, because how can you reach something that is so vague? More happiness.
Yeah.
I mean, happiness lies in the moment.
Right.
You
so it's really inviting people to think about how will we know as we're on the way, on the path, and what will we observe and see? What will you observe and see when you've gotten there? I don't know if you're familiar with the miracle question in solution-focused psychotherapy, but there's a question that you ask clients. Assume you wake up one day and a miracle has happened, and you're communicating better because you said you want that. What will you see, hear, feel? You know, what will all your senses tell you? What will you observe that will tell you that you are communicating better? So in a way, it kind of concretizes the goal in the ways that you're talking about.
Yeah, the goal has to be very specific. It has to be very clear. Otherwise, you cannot reach it. Or if you would reach it, you wouldn't know that you've reached it.
Yeah.
And that's another thing. I mean, as I said, I come from a background of very low self-esteem, very low belief in myself. But if you don't believe in yourself, or if you don't believe in your relationship, it will never work. It will just not work. If you don't believe in yourself, you will not take the action that is necessary to reach all the goals that you want to reach.
Yeah,
you will
that
just
kind
appear.
Of gets to my it gets to my next question that I was going to ask you about any obstacles that you what you would see as the biggest obstacle in general to people realizing their vivid vision, as you call it, or their ideals for change, and realizing their goals. Do you think that that's the basic one, a lack of self-belief?
Well, I think two things. One is they don't really know what they really want, you know, so they can't reach it because it doesn't exist yet in their mind, you know, it's non-existent. So they're always looking to the outside world. They look up at other people, or they're envious of other people who have more or are more than they are. But is it what they want? Might not be at all what they want.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the first thing is that people must become clear of what it is they truly want. That will give them a driver. That will give them the motivation that they need on a daily basis. It will give them, show them the gap that they need to fill from where they are now to where they want to go to. And it will give them action steps. It becomes much easier. The second, of course, very, very important is the self-belief. If you believe you are inferior to your partner, for instance, then the partnership will never be a true partnership because it will always be unbalanced. Even so, it might not be true and your partner might see it totally different. But if your opinion of yourself is so low, then you cannot see it as an equal.
I think there's another one also, one that I see a lot in my work, not connecting, as you encourage people to do in the book, not connecting with their own values and what's important to oneself, having kind of leaning into the vision of other people for you. I work with so many young people whose families had an idea about where they saw them going. I want you to be a doctor, or I want you to be a lawyer. And it was very hard for them to stop and say, do I want this? Who am I? What are my values? What's important to me?
That is unfortunately true. And also the people who we let ourselves be stopped by are normally our family members and our best friends. And they are often the ones that, with the best of intention, are trying to stop us.
Mm-hmm.
Because they see us as we were, first of all. Also, they love us as we are right now. They don't want us to change. They don't need us to change because they love us as we are. When they notice we want to go in a different direction, it's scary.
It's threatening.
Yeah, it is threatening. And they think, I don't want that person. I mean, how many times do we get told in our birthday, or when we get birthday greetings, you know, stay as you are, happy birthday, stay as you are. And for me, that's the worst you can wish anybody.
Absolutely.
Stay as you are. So definitely, we have to also be aware when we are making shifts in our life, it is possible that the other people will not follow us.
Yes.
It is possible that we might lose some friendships. It might be time to go in a different direction. But especially for young people, they should do the work, at least the work in the first chapter of the book. which helps them to become clear on who they want to become.
Right.
Because, you know, if your parents have been in the medical field, it's highly likely they want you to work in that same field. Or if they've been in the military or whatever profession, you know, lawyers or what have you. Normally, they take it for granted, especially if they have their own business, they take it for granted that you're going to take it over 40 years from today.
Yeah, exactly.
And you might have a totally different idea.
Yeah.
So become clear on that and talk to your family and talk to your friends and say, you know, because every one of us has the same right to make their dreams come true, everyone. But we are 7 billion people, and that makes it 7 billion dreams.
Yeah.
So, you know, don't be surprised if their dreams are different.
Part of what I liked in the book was you're addressing this factor about gathering support and helping creating a cheerleading team around you, because we are so influenced by the people we love, and helping them help us realize our dreams so that they don't become a hindrance to it, I think is it's really significant. I thought it was great that you addressed that. Now, Barbara, do you see any particular obstacles for people with relationship goals, goals that, given that they involve another person, also changing?
Well, I see, first of all, the obstacle of communication. In many cases, they don't communicate properly. It's all, you know, very often women don't dare to communicate what they really want and what they really feel to their partners, because they don't want to upset him, and poor man's been working all day, and then in the evening, you know, you don't want to bother him with your own ideas of life. I think that's wrong. You know, you need to communicate your dreams, share them with your partner. I believe that's absolutely essential. Also, we have to have that total trust and respect for each other, so that we know that no matter what, I can share my thoughts with my partner.
Right, right.
And
part of what happens in my work with couples is that people have goals for their partner. So if they want the relationship to be different, they're really talking about, will you change this jerk who's sitting next to me? Change my partner. And I think what's so valuable about your book is that it makes people think about how you're the captain of your own ship, that you really need to look at what is it that you want in life. And inevitably, relationships will change if you change. But I think pulling it back to myself, what do I want and what can I do, sounds really critical.
I think it absolutely is. And I want to give you a good example out of my own life. I don't know, maybe 20 years ago, I lived at home for a little while, you know, just for a few months, because I was working in tourism for 20-odd years, and I was, you know, every 6 months I changed countries, so I was at home for a few months, and I was fighting with my father all the time, two really strong-minded people, my dad and me, and so we were having a lot of heated discussions, and I went to this seminar called Landmark Education. Highly recommended. So I went to this Landmark Forum, and I had a massive breakthrough there, and I was flying. I mean, absolutely flying, so full of love that all I wanted was to get home as fast as possible and tell my mom and my dad how much I love them, how much I appreciate them, and that was all I wanted. I mean, I was filled from head to toe with that thought and that feeling. And I was so excited that I even drove down the wrong way along the motorway. You know, I drove in a totally different direction than I needed to, because I just couldn't think straight. And I had my father's motorhome. And I know in America they're not that expensive, but here they cost millions. I mean, literally, they are so super expensive. And so we had one of those super expensive, enormous motorhomes. And I had used it for the first time by myself. So I came home, my dad stood at the gate, he'd opened the gate, he was beaming, you know, happy to see me or his motorhome, I'm not sure. And so I drove in, And all I wanted was to open that door, you know how the steps go down electronically. And I thought, okay, I'm going to open that door and just sort of fling myself at him and hug him and kiss him and tell him how much I love him. We don't do that very often in Germany. It's not common here. So I wanted to do that. I open the door, the steps go down, and my dad stands there, hands on hips, shouting at me, "What have you done to my motorhome? It's scratched, the whole side is scratched." And he was really upset. And my normal reaction would have been to shout back, because I didn't feel guilty of anything. I wasn't aware. So I would have shouted back and another fight. But because of how I had changed in those 3 days prior, I just walked down the steps, went up to my dad, put my arm around him, and looked at him in all sincerity, and I said, "Where, Dad?" And he walked with me around the motorhome. He showed me the scratches. I told him, "I'm really sorry, Dad. I did not know. I didn't notice." And he could see that I was sincere. I was not upset or anything. The thing was scratched. I had done it somehow. I hadn't known. So I was just telling him the truth. But I wasn't getting worked up. I wasn't being on the defensive or reactive or anything. I just gave him the truth. And we walked in hand in hand into the house. And I thought about it, and I thought, wow, this was a totally different exchange than I normally have with him. And then maybe half an hour later, my dad was reading the newspaper, and I'd spoken with my mom, and one of the complaints I had about him was that he always seemed to take charge of my time, you know, tell me, "You've got to go with me to the bank this afternoon," or "Go with me there this afternoon," or whatever, you know, but he never asked me whether I had time or I wanted to go. He just commanded me to go, and I hated it. So I walk into the living room. My dad looks up from his newspaper, and he says, "We need to go to the lawyers. Is it convenient for you tomorrow afternoon at 3?
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, Susan, my jaw dropped. I was standing there, and I remember it to this day. I was standing there looking at him, and I thought, holy Moses, he hasn't been to the seminar. I have.
Mm-hmm.
But because I had changed,
yes,
he changed.
Yes.
And this
yes.
is what people need to be aware of. When you change your attitude, when you change your viewpoint, your way of communicating, things around you change for the better or for the worse, depending how you change.
Right. And when you let go of the notion of changing other people, but recognizing that if I work on me, maybe everybody around me will respond to me differently, that I can impact my environment in that way. That's such a crucial kind of leap for people to make.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
it sounds
we have.
Yeah, you did it, and that you realized that through the seminar.
Yeah, and it was amazing. I mean, it was such an eye-opener, you know. You talk about it, but actually experiencing it, that was like, wow, this stuff works.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Now, Barbara, you in the book you talked about limiting beliefs and negative self-talk, and you talk about all the internal scripts that people have going and how people need to replace these thoughts by planting positive thoughts. And I'm wondering, have you found this a challenge for people in your mastermind groups and workshops? I know it's very difficult in my work with problem-oriented couples. They're very focused on all the negative. And I try to get people to be more aware of the stream of negative self-talk. What's been your experience about that in your work?
Yes, it's challenging because, I mean, I'm sure that you and I, we also have our little inner voice that's giving us sometimes disempowering messages. It's giving us sometimes some information we don't want to hear, you know, we don't
right.
need. So I recommend in the book, for instance, one technique that put a rubber band around your wrist.
Love
and
it.
Each time you, and it really works well, and each time a thought comes up that is taking you away from where you want to go to. And again, here you need to know where you want to go to. You know, that's telling you you are not good enough, you are too old, you are too fat, you are too this or you are too that. Just snap it away. Snap it away by snapping that rubber band and inflicting a little bit of pain, because we learn through pleasure and pain. And I find that really easy to do, because I can carry, I mean, I have phases when I carry my rubber band up to this day. And you might see me somewhere, and when I have to face some challenges, my little voice still comes up and tells me all kinds of stuff that I don't need to hear, I don't want to hear, because those messages, they come from our childhood, and maybe we needed them when we were little kids.
Yes,
because
yes.
They were there to protect us. But now we're adults. Now we don't need this type of information anymore. But unfortunately, most of us have not learned how to listen to this self-talk that we give ourselves. My mom, I remember, whenever she had a really good day and things were going really well and we were really happy together, she said, "Oh, something bad is going to happen." I said, "Why, Mom?" "Oh, because I'm much too happy." It's like, hello. You know, I mean, like, you expect something bad to happen because
right.
You're happy? No. Another thing, that what you focus on expands. I can't remember who said that, but it's a fact of life. When you focus on the problem, like many couples do, they focus on the problem, especially the problem the other person has.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so destructive, because, first of all, you can't change the other person. That's a fact of life, and the faster they learn that, the better for them.
Right.
Second,
right.
When we focus on the problem, we create more of the problem, because we are giving it so much energy and attention. What I do is I focus on the solutions or on the stuff that I want. But
mm-hmm.
again, you need to know what you want.
Right,
you always
absolutely.
Come back to the same thing.
Yeah.
But, for instance, how I deal with fear is very easy, very pragmatic. All my stuff is really simple. Everybody can use it. And that is, I look at the worst-case scenario. What is the worst that can happen if everything goes wrong? Let's talk about relationships. If everything goes wrong in my relationship, what is the worst that can happen? And then ask yourself, will I survive it? And up to today, I could always give myself that honest answer, yes, I will survive it. I will hurt physically, emotionally, in many cases, in my case, financially. But I will survive it. And then I don't have to focus on that anymore. Now I've looked at all the really bad stuff that can happen. I don't have to look at that anymore, because I know I will survive it. Now I can focus on the best case scenario.
Right. And it's keeping somebody in a solution-oriented mode and addressing
absolutely.
Catastrophic thinking, so that it doesn't have to stop people dead in their tracks. And so much is written nowadays about thinking and how what we think about all day is who we become, and how our thinking is at the root. Eckhart Tolle's work all about our thoughts and how that colors everything. And I like that in the book about all the pieces helping people look at their thinking, especially their negative thinking. Now, Barbara, in we have about maybe 10 minutes left. Believe it or not, this is really fun.
Incredible, isn't it?
And I have a few more questions I just wanted to get to. And I'm wondering if you have found places in your travels that are more or less receptive to the idea and the concepts of choice and envisioning your life and moving toward it in a systematized way, places that are more or less receptive to that.
Do you mean cultures?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that Asia has is much more open to that.
Really?
Asia has, yes, much more open to that. I mean, when you go to Singapore or Malaysia, I've been there many times, and the difference is massive to our thinking. And it's much more positive and much, I mean, for instance, the newspaper doesn't have the gorged bodies of car accidents on the front page or murders. It talks about positive things that have happened on the front pages. And it talks about successes. The language is success language. In Singapore, when you read the main paper, it uses success language, positive, forward-moving language. Absolutely.
Okay. So
amazing.
If a culture is a little bit more depressive in its orientation, I don't know if you would say that about Nordic countries where there's sun is lacking for so much of the year, but more depressive in its orientation or depressive because of where they're at in their history, it sounds like it'll be less conducive to people being open to this kind of thinking.
Yeah, sure. But in the northern countries, they have a lot of nature, so that probably makes up for it. You know,
yeah.
Many of them live in nature. But what I find is America is very fear-based. I mean, your society is very fear-based, and that is run by the government. I mean, everything is like, we've got to be afraid. I mean,
yes.
When you think of the history of the country, you've been attacked twice in your whole history, twice.
Right.
And it's like, oh, my God, we've got to protect ourselves against the whole world.
Right,
I mean,
right.
You focus on that it's such a strong focus.
Yeah.
And everybody could be our enemy. Hey, I mean, people shouldn't be surprised that so much is happening because that's where the focus lies.
Right. Yeah, it's a paranoid stance. And the news,
yes.
The news here is just terrific. It's mostly crime, muggings and rapes and murders and robberies, and then it's natural, disasters like fires, and it's all trauma.
Trauma cells in our country. I mean, here in Germany too, it's similar. It's not quite as bad as in the States, but it's similar. And and it just keeps us in line. You know, we're also fearful, so we stay in line to what the government says. They try to help us, so we do what they tell us to do. But,
yeah.
I mean, people wake up. It's time for change.
Yeah.
For me, in my eyes, it's time for massive change.
Did you know that it's happening? Germany, actually, I just heard something on the news. This was one of the happier things I heard on the news, that Germany was just I don't know how they gathered their statistics, but it was noted as the happiest country in the world.
What?
Germany, yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, well.
You're in the right place.
But, no, I mean, it's not bad, actually. I have not lived in, I mean, I only live now since 2 years in Germany again. I have lived most of my adult life in other countries. But it's not as bad as I thought, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, Barbara, what are you up to next on this journey? Are you going to be writing another book, or what are you doing at this
point? I'm working on a really exciting project, and that is called Moments to Be.
Mm-hmm.
And those are short audio sessions. I can send you a few, and maybe you can put them on the show in one of the next few weeks. It's just 1 to 3 minute short practical tips and information on life in general, you know, in all kinds of things, about money, about our mindset, mainly, of course, because that's what I mainly do, is mindset work. So, and I want to bring out an audiobook called 365 Moments to Be.
Mm-hmm.
So I started recording that maybe 2 weeks ago, and whenever I find a moment, I love doing it. So I'm really getting into that right now. Then I'm preparing for this big event in Colorado, and I'm so super excited about that one. It's called the Festival of Enlightenment, and the website is festivalofenlightenment.com, and it's a whole week event, 7 days and seven nights, of motivation, inspiration, transformation, and great music.
Wow.
In the mountains near Denver, you know, in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
So I am super excited. And everybody and anybody that wants to see me, you will never get me as cheap as you get me there. I mean, seriously, because all of us do it for free. This is a non-profit event. And all of us speakers, and there's about 60 speakers there, and all of us do it for free. We don't get any fees paid. So I'm going to do 8 presentations. Can you imagine in 7 days, 8 presentations?
That's great.
Yeah, 6 of them are full workshops.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, people will never, ever see me again for next to nothing, because I think the ticket now, they still have early bird tickets, is $100 for the full 7 days.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah, including all the workshops, the music. I call it the Woodstock for the mind. You know, I'm so excited that I'm going there because I'm like, I feel like in my hippie days, you know.
Yeah. So it's festivalofenlightenment.com. I mean, how can people find out about that?
Oh, just go to the website, festivalofenlightenment.com, and check out all the great speakers that are going to be there. There's a few from Europe, but of course, most of them are from the States. I think a couple from Asia. And it's an amazing event. I mean, this is an event that was created out of the vision of one couple.
Mm-hmm.
They had the idea, and they recruited all of us into that idea. And I think it's absolutely phenomenal. And, I'm super excited. And it's a good opportunity for people to meet me in person and have their book signed or, you know, ask their questions or whatever, because I will be there for the whole time.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, is this a fundraising event, the Festival of Enlightenment?
Yeah, I hope it will be, but it's a non-profit event. So whatever profits are made, if any are made, will go to children charities and things like that.
Oh, how wonderful. Oh, it sounds exciting. It doesn't sound like you're going to have much time to be looking for a house in Germany, in Colorado, though.
Oh, well, I will just, go a couple of days early and leave a couple of days late.
Yeah.
And I'm taking my niece because I want her to immerse herself in that environment. You know, just imagine spending a full week with thousands of like-minded people.
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
That by itself will be transformational.
Just the energy. Yeah, the transformative
energy.
Absolutely. So, Barbara, nobody will ever accuse you of being flat or boring or bored. It sounds like this work is just so joyful and empowering for you, and it's just you have really found your niche, and it sounds like you're an example of somebody who's in process, living living your vision, living the life that you love.
That's it. I am a good role model for that.
Yes,
and
you are.
If people want to find me, because I just gave the festival website, it's Barbara Hofmeister with one F, BarbaraHofmeister.com. That's my hub site, and from there you can find me everywhere. And the book, you can get it on Amazon, and I saw it a few days ago. It was heavily discounted, just $12 and a few cents.
Okay.
So, you know,
okay.
I mean... Okay. Can't get it any cheaper than that.
Okay. I've also put the ASIN number of the book up on the site here.
Uh-huh.
And if anybody, I'm not really sure, but if they needed that in some way to order the book, the number of the book is right here up on my Couple Speak Relationship Forum site. To be or not to be, the choice is yours. And so it's obviously the book is doing well, and you've got another one in the works, and you're on a roll. And it sounds like it's really a very joyful thing for you to be spreading this word in this way.
It is.
Now, what do
it
you like least
is,
about the work
yeah.
you do? Is there something about it that you find either difficult or aggravating, or just not so wonderful?
Well, I find it aggravating that I need to market myself. You know, I don't enjoy doing that. I wish I could find a marketing specialist that loves his work as much as I love mine, that would sort of say, okay, we split profits, I do the marketing, you do the speaking and inspiring.
Okay.
That would be ideal for me, because then I can get, you know, I can focus on what I really love to
okay.
do.
Okay, I will, if you want to email me, I could email you after the show. There is a very powerful team called the Power of Three with Debbie Allen, Marie O'Rourdan, and Tracy Repchuk, who are all powerhouses in their own right. And Debbie Allen.
I know Tracy.
Yeah, well, I work with Tracy as my coach, but Debbie Allen is the marketing part of that team, and she's a powerhouse. She brands people, and I think you would find what you need in her, and then you wouldn't have to do all the because that is a hard part, trying to do all of it. When you, for me, a lot of what I love is writing.
It takes your focus away from what you're really good at and what you love to do also, you know. I want to be sitting, recording my moments to be so I can get it out as fast as possible. And I want to, you know, there's so much. I have one book that's nearly finished, but I just don't get the time to finish it and sort of, you know, get the flow right and all of that. And I want to do more life trainings again and so on and so on. And it's just, you know, 24 hours is just not enough.
Well, I have a solution, Barbara. My solution is that you just gradually cut back on sleep more and more. So I'm down to about 5 hours now. I literally have to force myself to go to bed at 1 o'clock in the morning, because if when I'm on a roll and I get in what I call a state of flow with writing and with these ideas, it seems like the need to sleep is such a pain in the neck.
It is, yeah.
I
stay up often until 2:30 at night, because I, you know, there's still something that needs to sort of come out. And
yeah,
but we do still need sleep, and you know, we don't get any younger, and I get more wrinkles and rings under my eyes, you know, when I don't sleep enough. So I want to look pretty when I come to Colorado. So I will try to get some sleep in.
Yeah. Well, Barbara, we're going to have to stop. We just have a few minutes left. I thank you so much for joining me and sharing your story and insights. It's really been a pleasure meeting you on air like this. I wish you all the best as you travel the world sharing your message and the To Be or Not To Be, The Choice Is Yours book. This has really been fun. And my hope is that we can encounter each other again, if not on internet radio, somewhere else.
I'm sure we can.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for having me, because it was a pleasure. And I think everybody heard that we enjoyed ourselves. And hopefully the listeners got some valuable information that they will implement immediately before you forget it. Just do it.
Absolutely.
And, you know,
one of the nice things,
moving.
Yeah, one of the nice things about the Blog Talk Radio is that people can listen to, I have at this point thousands of listeners who tune in to archived shows because the time of recording is not always great, or people are shy. We had a number of callers on today and nobody raised their hand, so people are shy, but they can tune in and access this. So I want to thank all you listeners for tuning in. I hope you all enjoy the show as much as Barbara and I did. And I just want to let you listeners know that you can tune into my next show, which is Wednesday, May 4th at the usual 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in the U.S. And the name of that episode is The Top 10 Marital Cop-Outs of All Time. It should be fun. It's actually excerpted from a book that I'm working on called Couple Speak, A Pocket Guide to Marriage Mojo. So,
sounds interesting.
Yeah. I think we're really on the same wavelength, Barbara. Anyway, I want to thank you, and I hope you have a great day, and let's be in touch. And best of luck to you, Barbara.
Thank you so much, and best of luck to you, and maybe I see you in Colorado.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.